Is Facebook bad for our mental health? Google Glass could be fashionable, and an Apple Watch you can eat. Tech News Tonight is next.
This is Twit.
This is Tech News Tonight, episode 324 for Friday, April 24th, 2015. This episode of Tech News Tonight is brought to you by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com. Get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code TN2 when you check out. Welcome, I am Megan Maroney, and this is the show where we cover the latest tech headlines and talk to an expert behind the headlines. Let's get to a little bit of today's news. As part of their first quarter earnings this week, Facebook revealed that they currently have 1.44 billion monthly active users. That's compared to the approximately 7.3 billion people who live in the world. So when we constantly hear news stories about how Facebook makes us depressed and self-absorbed and less empathetic, I can't help but think that that's a lot of sad, narcissistic psychopaths out there. So today I thought we might appreciate a more optimistic view. So joining me today is Dr. Ellen Hendrickson, licensed psychologist, clinical assistant professor at Stanford University, and host of the Savvy Psychologist podcast on the Quick and Dirty Tips Network. Welcome, Ellen.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, I really love your podcast. I am a frequent
Thank
listener.
Thank you.
And
awesome.
I listen with my kids and sometimes by myself. I've learned so much. It's a good alternative to therapy, but you know, not a replacement, as you say, to therapy. So what did you find out when you started to dig into the research about Facebook and happiness?
Sure. So your intro is actually really spot on. There's a lot of negativity about Facebook. There is research to show it makes us depressed. It gives us eating disorders. It makes us generally more antisocial. But you're right. There are 1.44 billion users. And in addition, I didn't see a scientific article about this, but I saw an article online that notes that Facebook users give an average of 40 minutes per day to the site. And so I thought there must be something redeeming going on if people are giving 40 minutes out of their day to this. And luckily I dug into the literature. Luckily there is some good news. There are ways to maximize your happiness and your time on Facebook.
So what's one way that people can improve their happiness while they're spending that 40 minutes on Facebook?
Sure. So I digging around, so I found there are three great ways to get the most out of Facebook. And the first rule is to participate. So there was a 2013 study that found that folks who go on Facebook and just scroll through their newsfeed and don't post anything or don't comment are more likely than those who do participate to feel envious and dissatisfied when they log off. So the first guideline is to be active, to do things on Facebook. And the second guideline is to be positive. And that's because when you post positive information, you get positive feedback. It turns into this positive reinforcement, virtuous cycle, which I know like any given interaction on Facebook is not going to, have a big effect. But if you can think of it as drops in the bucket, all those drops together aggregated over many, many interactions can actually, it was found in this 2012 study out of Columbia University, raise a user's self-esteem. And it was not only found in this outside study, but by Facebook itself, because this is a slightly infamous experiment. In January of 2012, Facebook actually manipulated some of its users' news feeds, and in some, it suppressed the positive news. So you would just see like negative postings. And in other news feeds, it suppressed the negative news. So you would see more positive postings. And what they found is that when people were exposed to more negative news feeds, they were more likely to post negative news themselves. But also that if they were exposed to more positive news feeds, that they would be more likely to post the good news, the like, I got a promotion, or like, look at pictures of my new baby, or whatever the good stuff was. And that showed that these moods are contagious, and that it really, again, creates this vicious or virtuous cycle.
Right. I think what they also found was that people didn't really like being manipulated on Facebook.
No, this is true. Yes. You'd think out of, more than a billion users, they could have found people to consent to be in a study. But anyway, so there was much controversy over the methods of the study, and that Facebook, to their credit, later apologized. So I don't think they'll be doing that again. So the big disclaimer to these guidelines is that this only works if the people in your newsfeed and the people you are Facebook friends with are actual friends, are people that you feel close emotional ties to. So if your newsfeed is filled with, you know, acquaintances from high school you haven't seen in 20 years and don't really care about, or somebody you met at a conference once, but, you know, you don't know anything about them, it's not going to work. It has to be people to which you have close emotional ties. So that's something important.
Yeah, that is interesting because, I mean, you think about, you do have, especially of people of our generation who didn't have Facebook, you know, so we lost touch with people right. And then found them again. So you're mm-hmm. saying like those people, if we're not really connected to them anymore, if Facebook is our only connection, then connecting to them isn't necessarily going to make us any happier.
Right, exactly.
So is more friends better just in general?
That's a great question. Yeah, no, it's also it's the question of every, you know, anxious teenager who's looking at their friend numbers. So so there was a 2008 study. So that's 7 years ago. So in terms of social media time, that might as well be 7 million years ago. But I think the findings still bear out. And so that particular study found that the optimal number of Facebook friends to have at that time was between 100 and 300. And I think that the numbers probably have inched up now just because Facebook's been around longer. But what happened there is that after 300, it was found that people suspected gratuitous friending, that you were just, you know, trying to friend anyone you could to pump up your numbers and, you know, make yourself look cool. And so, but that, you know, people saw through that. And so I think now I know the Pew Research Center shows that the average number of Facebook friends is 338. But the median, so if you can think back to middle school math, so the median is 200. So that means that half of Facebook users have over 200 friends, but half of Facebook users have under 200 friends. And that around there is probably optimal. There has been social psychology research showing that the human brain can really only keep up with 150 social relationships at a time. Like you're just cognitively, you can't exceed your capacity is kind of capped at 150. And so if you want to use that as a guideline, there are certainly ways to, if you want to, you know, if you're that anxious teenager and want to pump up your numbers, you can do that. But then there are ways to go through your friend list and have and select whose information shows up in your feed. So you don't have to, you know, see everybody's news or go through the awkwardness of unfriending people. But if you want to cull it down to about 150, that is cognitively your best bet.
All right. So are there any more positive ways that we could connect using Twitter?
Sure. So I was hoping you would ask that. So I went and I dug around in a database called PubMed, which is this big nerdy compendium of all medical studies and psychological studies, and looked for Twitter and found that pretty much everything is very preliminary at this point. Facebook has really gotten the bulk of the research. But I did find some medical studies finding that medical researchers are trying to figure out if Twitter can be leveraged for medical screenings, like getting a mammogram, getting a pap smear, things like that. Just like kind of they were inspired by the like political uprisings that were really communicated across or used Twitter to communicate and like really used Twitter as this network to leverage social trends. And so they want to see if they can do the same thing for medical services, and also perhaps support people who are using mental health services, maybe encourage people to get screened for depression even. It's nothing's happening, nothing big is happening yet, but it sounds like there's a lot of potential and researchers are cognizant that this could be a really big potential tool.
Right. So Twitter is more about like influencers. So if Angelina Jolie told everyone,
exactly,
go get a mammogram, or, you know, just any
yes,
Twitter influencer, that could really help. Not just in
absolutely
a positive way.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think technology as a whole is generally making us less empathetic? And that's what we hear a lot. We're not, we're not engaging face to face. We're more, you know, engaging online, not seeing the people that we're talking to. Do you agree that we're heading towards less empathy because of technology?
Sure. So I think it can go both ways with technology. I think that having access to like this 24-hour news cycle, to having, you know, the horrible, terrible news, you know, online all the time, can and does make us more callous. I think just you can't feel empathy at all times for everything that's going on. But I also think that with more and more individuals sharing their stories, like on blogs or social media, like postings that go viral, it can be easier to put ourselves into that individual's shoes, which is essentially what empathy is. So it's being able to feel someone else's emotion and experience as if it was your own without losing that as if quality. And so I think when we can connect to an individual online that may have a very different experience than us, it can actually be quite powerful.
Yeah, I see that a lot more in YouTube, I think. You know, with Facebook and Instagram, it's like a lot of curated, yeah. I have the perfect filter on the picture.
Right.
But, you know, with YouTube, it's like someone really talking about their problems in their bedroom, something you would never see. Or also virtual reality, we're hearing a lot about that as a way to really be in someone else's shoes and increase empathy, hopefully. So what about Instagram?
Sure. So, I mean, in terms of mental health, I think, so Instagram is a visual medium. So it's probably not a great match for mental health, which is by and large not, you know, manifested externally. Like it's your cognitions, it's, you know, your emotions. So I think it's not the greatest match, but so I did look and so what I found, the first entry for when you enter Instagram into PubMed is dermatology on Instagram. Which to me, this is just an aside, but just sounds terrible. Like I'm sure you don't want to look at somebody's rash or boil or something like that on Instagram. And so, but to their credit, I was thinking perhaps this could be useful for like rural health medicine. Like if it could save somebody a 500-mile drive to a dermatologist, like sure, go ahead. But you know, that worst app idea ever. Like I hope there's never a dermatology on Tinder. Like, could you imagine? Like, you know, does this look infected to you? Swipe right for, you know, yes. Swipe left for no.
I hope so. Yeah.
I hope not.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot of news about Instagram, you know, what it's doing to teenagers and, you know, and it's mainly they talk about girls and,
absolutely,
you know, how they fight and how they, you know, and I mean, right. I have a 12-year-old and, you know, I see her using it in positive ways. I see they have TBH, which is to be honest, and you know she and often that is used as like a slam book kind of, you know, but what she uses is, you know, she tells every person in her, you know, that follows her, every friend she has on Instagram, like something nice about them, like that's what
she
does,
wonderful.
You know, something
that's so great.
You know, there's the positive and the negative, and so I wanted to ask you, speaking of the negative, about internet trolls. Now you have a podcast, so maybe you've also experienced this, but I sometimes have people emailing me and they'll tell me that I'm just, they'll start off, you're horrible at what you do, just not constructive criticism at all, just get the last person back, I hate you, etc. I get lots of positive, but I get those, and I usually respond, you know, thanks for the feedback, thank you for watching. And then this has happened a few times, they will email me back with then very constructive criticism of what I can do better. And I'm always surprised that these people actually think that I'm interested in their constructive criticism when they've started the conversation with, I hate you.
I hate you, right.
I mean, exactly. I love constructive criticism, but to start there and then to think, I mean, from a psychological perspective, do you have any idea what's going on here?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, so good. First of all, good for you for engaging professionally and like kindly with them. That good for you. That's awesome. So yes, I absolutely get my fair share of hate email, and I hate it. It's, you know, it's horrible. And so there has been research on internet trolls, and it's actually been shown that they are horrible, miserable people. So this was a 2014 study out of the Journal of Personality and Individual Differences. And so they polled 1,200 people who are very active online, and they ran personality measures on them and also just like their internet activity. And so they found that the people who were off the charts on three things, so narcissism, psychopathy, and sadism. So if you had those like three, that triad, those people were most likely to rate trolling as one of their favorite activities. So basically trolls are the bullies from middle school who, you know, would lock us in the locker, you know, except all grown up. And now they're online. So the key though is for dealing with them is that trolls are looking for a reaction. They are trying to push a button. If you get angry or if you like get indignant, like you've given them what they want. And so you can do one of two things. You can do what you do, which is to engage them on a human level and to, you know, say thank you for listening, you know, like just to be polite, basically. And that takes the wind out of their sails. Or you can just ignore them, because either way, they're not getting what they want. They're not getting that button pushing reaction.
Right. So then I guess you mentioned narcissism. So that's probably where that comes in. You think your opinion is most important. So that's why they're then giving me their opinion about my
Book. Well, and you know, and the sadism too, like basically these trolls are out to hurt people and get enjoyment from hurting people. So if you get a terrible comment or, you know, a hate email, really know that is not about you. This is really them being a sick person and trying to get a reaction. So yeah, it's you don't have to engage, but if you want to, the best way to do it is politely, because that's not what they're expecting.
Right. So what are your thoughts about online therapy? You know, being able to just, you know, pull up an app on my phone and talk to a therapist, or even just apps that just don't include therapists and are just ways to just make you happier. What do you think about those?
Sure. So I think that, I mean, there is always going to be a place for traditional in-person face-to-face therapy. That said, there is a desperate need for mental health services out there. So I know of hospitals and treatment centers in my area for which the wait list to see a licensed staff person is up to a year. And that's just not acceptable. Like we can't do that. It's part of our broken healthcare system. And so while I think that apps or online therapy probably should not necessarily replace traditional therapy, but I think they can be a good supplement. And so, you know, for those people on the wait list, I think it can be a way to get started and at least do something. Or after you finish your course of therapy, I think online therapy or apps could be great boosters. It could be a way to keep your skills up, be an active participant in your own mental health care. I think there are a lot of good things that they can do. And some of the positive features are a number of the apps have internal like password protection, so you can feel comfortable giving your phone like to your partner or your friend or whatever to look at something and not have to worry that they're going to, you know, dig around in your therapy app. So they can be used anonymously. Like you don't have to sign in with a username, you don't have to, or give your real name or anything like that. And until the stigma of mental illness is lessened, which I, you know, certainly is a whole nother topic. But until that happens, I think anonymous use is going to be a really attractive feature for a lot of people.
Right. Well, Ellen, thank you so much for coming on. Ellen Hendrickson is the host of the Savvy Psychologist podcast. That's on the Quick and Dirty Tips Network. And of course, you can find it in iTunes or any place where you subscribe to your podcasts. Where are the other places where people can follow you online?
Sure. So yeah, in addition to iTunes or Stitcher, so the best place, so I'm part of a consortium of experts on the Quick and Dirty Tips Network, so quickanddirtytips.com, and appropriately to our topic on Facebook.
All right. Thank you so much, Ellen.
Thank you.
Take care.
You too. Have a great day.
You too. Coming up, Windows 10 brings back Solitaire, and Samsung's new spoofs of the classic unboxing videos are hilarious, especially if you're a fan of parkour. But first, this episode of Tech News Tonight is brought to you by Harry's. Razors are expensive. They run about $4 a blade. A guy who shaves every day spends hundreds of dollars a year just on razors. Harry's sells high-quality razors at about half the price of the big brands that you probably use right now. Harry's makes their razors in their own factory in Germany. They engineer them for sharpness and high performance. Harry's ships them free right to your front doorstep, and because they make and ship their own blades, they're a more efficient company, which means they can offer factory direct pricing. Harry's guarantees your satisfaction. I gave a kit to my husband, and he loved it. The kit includes a razor with a handle that looks and feels great, 3 razor blades, and foaming shave gel. I've got a kit right here that maybe you could take a look at. It's the starter set. It's the Truman set. It's an amazing deal. You get all of this for just $15. The razor comes in here. It's very beautiful. If I don't drop it or cut myself, there it is. Harry's offers a clean and close and comfortable shave. They also have a new aftershave moisturizer that protects and hydrates your skin. There it is. It's a very sturdy kit. Go to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase with the code TN2. That's harrys.com and enter the code TN and the number 2 at checkout. We thank Harry's for their support of Tech News Tonight. Now on to a few more stories we're following today. Yesterday, Defense Secretary Ash Carter officially admitted that Russian hackers had attacked one of the Pentagon's unclassified networks. The Wall Street Journal reports that the admission came as a part of a speech Carter gave announcing the government's new cybersecurity strategy. The strategy includes opening an office in Silicon Valley where the Pentagon will have direct access to tech companies, cutting-edge products and people, an endless stream of free Dr. Pepper and Fritos, dog-friendly offices, and company swag. Did you think Google Glass was dead? Oh, it is not. It's just Italian now. Ian Thompson at the Register says that Google's Tony Fadell will work with Italian eyewear manufacturer Luxottica to make Google Glass less ridiculous. Luxottica owns Oakley and Ray-Ban. Fadell was the mastermind behind Nest and the iPod. So I am imagining a pair of Ray-Bans with two iPod Nanos instead of lenses, and you control it on the side with a big Nest thermometer, and people will buy it. Because it's Italian. The Verge discovered that Solitaire is back in Microsoft's newest operating system, Windows 10. Microsoft inexplicably removed Solitaire from Windows 8, but now it is back and not better than ever. Nope, still the same old Solitaire. You people who play Solitaire on your computer, you know there's a YouTube, right? Lots of people online were talking about how today Samsung hinted at making a round smartwatch at some point in the future. I was much more impressed with Samsung's new unboxing spoof videos for their new Galaxy phones. Can we watch a little bit of one? Any of those are great. Typical unboxing.
Samsung Galaxy S6 Edge. Looks pretty sweet. Got the dual edge design right here. Now, a cool thing about this phone is you can see message alerts even when it's face down. And you can color code your favorite contact so that depending on what color the phone glows, you know who's trying to reach you. As you can see, the back, it's all glass. Oh, sorry, one second. What? They're coming?
What? They're coming. You can watch the rest. We'll have a link to those on our website. There's an awesome one that also involves parkour. It's great. I just, you know, it's the unboxing. It's funny. Everybody says it feels good in the hand. That's what everyone says about every phone ever. And finally, you might have heard that today is the Apple Watch D-Day. Lots of unboxing events everywhere. Many important discussions about whether or not you can shower with the Apple Watch or not. And just a general sense of excitement and envy and disgust everywhere all the time. Business Insider and Mashable both reported on one internet phenomenon that Apple's new must-have gadget has spawned people putting actual apples on their wrists. And also artist Hinae Mitsushima. I am probably not pronouncing that right, and I am sorry. He also made an Apple Watch out of felt, which is also really nice. You do not have to charge it at all. Do you have a homemade Apple Watch? Send me a picture of it. You can email me at megan@twit.tv, or you can tweet your photo to me at Megan Maroney. That's two R's in Maroney and ends with an E. So I asked you to send in selfies watching or listening to Tech News tonight. We received another one. So here is today's TN2 selfie fan of the day. That's Ken McDowell, who sent in this photo with the following tweet. I watch TN2 when I get home from work. And thank you for tweeting that. Send us your selfies. Tag your pictures with hashtag TN2selfie on Twitter, Google+, Instagram, or via email to tn2@twit.tv. Tell us a little bit about yourself. We might choose to show your selfie on the show. And that is it for this edition of Tech News Tonight. You can subscribe to the show at twit.tv/TN2. You can find all your subscription needs there, iTunes, Stitcher, all the places. You can also write to us at tn2@twit.tv. And you can watch live every weekday at live.twit.tv, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, other times in other places. And don't miss our morning news program, Tech News Today, every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. I am Megan Maroney. Thank you for watching.
Bandwidth for Tech News Tonight is brought to you by CashFly.com.